Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. After 36 years of exhaustive research, writing a book on the assassination, and interviewing hundreds of witnesses, one question still looms large. Did Lee Harvey Oswald kill President John F. Kennedy? My answer to that is a resounding no. To even ask who killed Kennedy, if not Oswald, is to entertain the possibility of a conspiracy. But after decades of studying the evidence, I can't ignore what we've uncovered. So if Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill President Kennedy, then who did? In the episodes ahead, we begin our investigation into the individuals and organizations that may have played a role in the assassination. We'll examine the intelligence community's fingerprints on Oswald's movements and associations. We'll look at the role of anti-Castro Cuban exiles, many of whom had deep ties to U.S. intelligence and a motive rooted in betrayal. Then we'll look at the shadowy network of organized crime, which had both the means and motive to silence Kennedy. And finally, we'll look at key figures in the Dallas law enforcement community and local politics, whose actions raise serious questions about their possible role in the assassination. Each of these threads lead us closer to understanding not just who pulled the trigger, but who orchestrated the cover-up and why. Join me as we peel back the layers of deception and follow the evidence wherever it leads. The truth didn't die in Dealey Plaza. It's waiting to be uncovered. In this week's episode, we continue to look at the man that they call Madryn. Several books, television programs, and many podcasts have been focused on an ex-Dallas police officer that many researchers think was a trigger man who really killed JFK. That man is Roscoe White. Over the next few episodes, we're going to listen to a new special I recorded almost 30 years ago. We started this series a couple episodes ago, so if you missed them, I suggest you go back and listen to episode 129 and 130 to get caught up where we pick up the trail in today's episode. This series, produced by TV news journalist Becky Neighbors from Big 2 News in Odessa, Texas, explores the theory of Roscoe White being the assassin that killed John Kennedy in 1963. In 1990, Ricky White, the son of Roscoe White, brought his story to Larry Howard and other researchers at the JFK Assassination Information Center in Dallas. Ricky White claimed to have evidence that proved his father, Roscoe White, was the gunman behind the picket fence in Dealey Plaza and had delivered the fatal shots that struck President Kennedy in the head. Roscoe White was working as a Dallas police officer at the time of the shooting. Roscoe White was also in the same military division as Lee Harvey Oswald, and the two were stationed together in Marine Air Wing 1 at Japan's Aksugi Air Base. Roscoe White had a wife named Geneva, who worked for Jack Ruby at the Carousel Club. There is some evidence to suggest that Officer J.D. Tippett also was acquainted with the White family. So today is part 3 of this 3-part series of the man they call Madryn, Roscoe White. After we hear this 3-part series, I will then break down the evidence against Roscoe White, talk about what we've learned about him since this special aired, and come to a conclusion if he could have been the shooter on the grassy knoll that fateful day in Dallas. This is just the beginning of our series we're calling, If Lee Harvey Oswald Didn't Kill President Kennedy, Then Who Did?
Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
You probably haven't seen many pictures of Lee Harvey Oswald, the man tagged the assassinator of President John Kennedy. That's why tonight's segment is so important. You're going to hear from researchers who believe the photograph of Oswald given to the news media after Kennedy's murder in 1963 is a fake. The picture shows Oswald holding a rifle as he's standing in his backyard. Some researchers now say that famous photo is actually Midlander Ricky White's dad, Roscoe White. As we continue our special exclusive series of reports, JFK, the West Texas Connection, look and listen closely The man you're about to see may not be the man lawmen say killed JFK. Today, Jack White has returned to the home where Lee Harvey Oswald lived in Dallas before he became known as the assassin of President John Kennedy. White is trying to recreate this famous photograph of Oswald holding a rifle. In 1963, this picture was flashed on television sets across the country as Oswald was branded JFK's killer.
You people have been given, but I emphatically deny these charges.
During his interrogation by Dallas police, Oswald told them the photo was fake.
These incriminating photos of Oswald's were fakes, just as he tried to tell the Dallas police.
He thinks the man posing in the picture is Midlander Ricky White's father, Roscoe White.
Notice that the person in the backyard photos has a broad, flat chin, while these pictures of Oswald show him with a pointed cleft chin, not at all like the one in the backyard photos. Now look at the chin of Roscoe White, whose chin most closely matches the one in the backyard photos.
Oswald and Roscoe White were in the Marines together, trained at a CIA camp in Japan, and would end up living close to each other in Dallas before Kennedy's assassination in 1963. Roscoe White had just been hired on at the Dallas Police Department. These close connections, plus investigative work by Jack White, has convinced JFK researchers the photo could be Roscoe White, not Lee Harvey Oswald.
White was about the same height as Oswald. In fact, there were many physical similarities between the two, with the exception of the neck and chin. Roscoe had a thick neck with big sloping shoulders, while Oswald had a thin neck with narrow shoulders. When I enlarged the photos of Oswald and Roscoe to the same size and laid one over the other, I was astounded to find that the height, posture, and even some features are an identical match. Also, it is known that Roscoe suffered a broken right wrist which never healed properly and left a slight lump on his arm. Oswald had no such lump. In this backyard photo, there's a noticeable lump on the figure's right wrist. It certainly seems to me that the figure in the photo could be that of Roscoe White.
Jack White, a photo analyst and commercial artist in Dallas, has been working on this fake photo theory for nearly 30 years. He believes Roscoe White was put in the Dallas Police Department by the CIA to make sure Oswald was set up as Kennedy's assassin.
I believe Roscoe White was placed on the Dallas Police Force to help frame Oswald for the assassination.
When Oswald was arrested, two photographs of him with a gun were found. However, suspicion over the photos grew after a burglary in 1975 at Ricky White's mother's house in Paris, Texas. That's when a third Oswald photograph turned up. Ricky says somehow this picture and others made its way into the hands of Washington investigators looking into the Kennedy assassination back in 1976. Ricky thinks this may be one of many reasons why he and his mother Geneva White were questioned about the photo by investigators with the House Select Committee.
In the shadow under Oswald's nose is straight down at 12 o'clock, but yet the shadow on the ground is at 10 o'clock. The shadows don't match. And on photograph number two, we have the rifle pointing about 11 o'clock, but yet the rifle in the shadow is pointed at 9 o'clock. It doesn't work. But the significance is that Roscoe White had a third pose of Oswald that no one else had. And it's been proven by experts that these are fake photographs.
As part of the fake photo theory, Jack White was called to Washington in 1976, and he too would be questioned by the House Select Committee.
This is one of several dozen photographs the Dallas police claimed was found in Oswald's belongings. Apparently, it is a photo Oswald took while in the Marines. There are other photos of Marines and photos of Asian cities. In this photo of Oswald's Marine buddies, I found one person especially intriguing. After comparing the man in the fatigue cap in the center with many photos of Roscoe, I'm convinced they may well be photos of the same man.
This fake photo conspiracy is on display at the JFK Assassination Information Center in Dallas. Director Larry Howard also believes the photo of Oswald is really that of Roscoe White. The fake photo conspiracy would be one of many closely examined by movie director Oliver Stone as he prepared for his controversial movie, JFK. The movie released in 1991 was an instant blockbuster. As a consultant and right-hand man for Stone, Howard provided him with over 400 photographs, 20 videotapes, and several witnesses connected to the Kennedy assassination. One of those, Oswald's widow, Marina.
And he's done more for this case with the movie JFK than all us researchers in the last 30 years put together. He's the one responsible for having the files open today.
Was there one man or three who shot and killed John Kennedy? Well, those who believe there was a cover-up question how many gunmen were involved and how many bullets were fired. Tomorrow night, a doctor gives his account of what he saw in Trauma Room 1 at Parkland Hospital that fateful day, November 22, 1963. JFK, the West Texas Connection, continues tomorrow night at 10. While many say there was a conspiracy to kill President John Kennedy in 1963 and have it covered up, one doctor says there was a medical conspiracy as well. For nearly 30 years, Dr. Charles Crenshaw kept silent about what he saw at Parkland Hospital, where Kennedy was brought in after being shot in downtown Dallas. The reason he speaks out today, Crenshaw says the autopsy pictures of Kennedy have been altered. As we continue our special series of exclusive reports, JFK, the West Texas Connection, tonight Big Two's Deanne Holcomb takes a look at the medical journey into how Kennedy died.
Bulletin, this is from the United Press from Dallas. President Kennedy and Governor John Connally have been cut down by assassin's bullets in downtown Dallas. They were riding in an open automobile when the shots were fired. The president, his limp body carried in the arms of his wife, Jacqueline, has rushed to Parkland Hospital.
All I can say is, where is the wound in the back of the head that 27 people saw that's not in the autopsy pictures?
Dr. Charles Crenshaw was 30 years old and a resident doctor at Parkland Hospital on the day President John Kennedy was taken there after being gunned down while riding in his motorcade in Dealey Plaza. As a trauma doctor, he would be used to treating gunshot victims, stab wounds, and victims of car accidents. But none of this had prepared him for seeing the President of the United States lying on a gurney, hanging on to life.
People in suits were running around. People were crying. There were all kinds of problems with the perimeter. The FBI didn't know the Secret Service, and vice versa. I'd have to see the entrance wound before he made this incision through it. And then, of course, the trick he asked me to was put in place. He still was not breathing well.
What was going on? Was it just total silence? What was happening?
It was very little said because it was such a gripping moment. I think we did our procedures rather quietly, kind of like a team. Everybody was working to get an airway going, to make him breathe correctly and establish circulation. But there wasn't a lot of talking at all.
Do you remember what you were thinking at that time?
Well, I was thinking that I'd trained all my life to be a surgeon, and here was a traumatic wound to the President of the United States, and I couldn't do anything about it.
The assassin's bullets had done more to kill Kennedy than Crenshaw and the other doctors could do to save his life.
But his toes were exposed, and I'll always remember Mrs. Kennedy as she came in with Admiral Berkeley. She stopped and kissed his right great toe before she went forward to hold his right hand and to listen to the mass that was being given by the priest there. And then he was given the last rites. I was thinking about all of the world had just been changed by a couple of gunshot wounds.
The United Press reports that the president died at 1:35.
Chaos at Parkland Hospital would continue as word spread of Kennedy's death.
And then I was surprised that they got the Justice of the Peace, Baron Ward, from Garland to drive into Parkland and to sign the death certificate and to release Kennedy's body in the face of being told by Dr. Rose that it was against the law. It was against Texas law, and they could not move the body. And the phalanx of guards, I don't know who it was, looked at him and said, "We're taking this body out. We're the Secret Service. This is the President of the United States." And I really believe that they were rolled over on top of Dr. Rose.
Tired, depressed, and in shock over the president's death, Crenshaw was even more amazed at news reports that there was a lone assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, responsible for killing Kennedy. The reports also told how the bullets fired from Oswald's gun hit Kennedy from behind. But that's not what Crenshaw saw in trauma room one.
The feeling of all of us was that the bullet wound had gone in the throat here, the lower third of the throat, with an entrance wound from the front. And likewise, I felt that the wound in the back of the head was a tangential shot behind the, above the hairline, here, right in the right rear of the side of his head. You could put your fist in it.
While Crenshaw questioned this latest revelation, never in his wildest dreams did he think he would come face to face with Kennedy's believed assassin. But that's what would happen. Crenshaw and other doctors would be ordered to go to the emergency room. As Crenshaw walks in, he sees Lee Harvey Oswald. Here, 2 days later, Oswald was hanging on to life after being shot by Jack Ruby.
He had an operating team ready to go immediately, and his anesthesia was pure oxygen because he was in extreme, profound shock. He did, he had no pressure, but he did have a pulse.
Inside the operating room, Crenshaw is tapped on the shoulder and asked to take a phone call.
Picked up the phone, and this voice, like thunder, said, "This is the president, Lyndon B. Johnson. How is the accused assassin doing?" And I said, "Well, he's lost a lot of blood, but he is holding his own." He said, "There's a man in the room, and I want him to be able to take a deathbed confession." Oswald wouldn't have been able to talk even if he'd survived.
A code of silence took over at Parkland Hospital. The reason, Crenshaw says, fear of the unknown surrounding Kennedy's death is why many of the doctors, including himself, decided to keep quiet. He says the scope of corruption to cover up seemed so powerful that he, like the others, feared for their medical careers. In 1991, when Crenshaw was at the JFK Assassination Center in Dallas, he saw for the first time the original pre-autopsy pictures of Kennedy, taken at the hospital in Bethesda, Maryland, where the autopsy was performed. Crenshaw was outraged at what he saw, and he promised he would not be silenced anymore.
And I believe he'd gotten shot twice from the front, the second one being from the side as a tangent above the hairline, hitting in the behind the right ear, knocking out the size of a baseball out of the right rear part of the president's head. And for me to see the back of his head intact, I think that was just an incredible experience.
Crenshaw kept his promise, and in April of 1992, his book, JFK, Conspiracy of Silence, was published. Today, Crenshaw, at the age of 60, has retired from chief of surgery at John Peter Smith Hospital in Fort Worth, although he still goes into work part-time. As Crenshaw reflects on his career and success as a surgeon, those 3 days in 1963 will always be a part of his mind, heart, and soul. Quietly to himself, Crenshaw will always wonder why Kennedy had to be assassinated, throwing our country into one of the darkest moments in history, never to be forgotten. Deanne Holcomb, Big 2 News.
As our special series of exclusive reports, JFK, the West Texas Connection, continues. Tomorrow night at 10, it's back to Van Horn and more information on the radio equipment believed to be a part of what the assassins used as they prepared for the plot to kill Kennedy. And witnesses come forward with information about the conspiracy. That's tomorrow night at 10 on the Big 2 News Update. Tonight, we bring our series of exclusive reports, JFK, the West Texas Connection, to a close. But due to overwhelming response from you, we will continue researching what we found out and will update you in the coming weeks. Since our series began, we have received important information, not only from researchers across the country, but from people right here in the Permian Basin who have watched our series and have come forward to tell us what they know. And to all of you, thank you for what you've shared with us. It's been almost 30 years since the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, and while America was told Lee Harvey Oswald was the man responsible for his death, not everyone would believe it.
Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Snap search.
30 years trying to find one small item that would convince me that Lee Harvey Oswald did it as the government said. That doesn't exist. And the evidence points to multiple shooters, therefore a conspiracy and a cover-up, which means somebody's in control of what we know about this. And if they're in control, then we need to be concerned, and I am.
Researchers believe that Midlander Ricky White's father, Roscoe Anthony White, was one of several gunmen that fateful day in Dealey Plaza. JFK Assassination Center director Larry Howard served as the conspiracy consultant to Oliver Stone on the movie JFK.
I was the one that positioned the gunman in Dealey Plaza. It was my job. And I put the gunman, one of them, behind the picket fence with a house that the police said someone was. The witnesses said someone was. And then Roscoe said he was, because he marked in the green book where he was standing.
The green book is what researchers call the witness elimination book, believed to be a list of the people Roscoe White had murdered. Researchers say the fact that Roscoe knew Lee Harvey Oswald and had served with him in the Marines, that Roscoe had joined the Dallas Police Department just prior to the assassination, and the fact that his wife Geneva once worked for Jack Ruby add up to more than just a coincidence. But proving it, they say, has been difficult since everyone involved has died, including Roscoe and Geneva White. But Howard says there's still hope that someone out there knows something that will tie it all together.
If we solve this case, it's going to be someone walking through the door just like Ricky Ryan did and telling us one thing about it.
Howard says after Ricky first told of his father's possible involvement in the assassination during a news conference in 1990 and the release of Oliver Stone's movie JFK a year later, more and more people have called or come into the center to tell what they know.
The first man that came to me used to work in the CIA. It was in on the day of Pease invasion. And in the summer of 1963, he came to Dallas and tried to buy some guns from Roscoe White. They then went together to see General Walker, who was living in Dallas at the time, to try to get some financing for the projects that we're working on.
Howard says another man owned a nightclub, and he walked into the center with his wife, telling Howard Jack Ruby was his best friend.
He said in November, early November of 63, Jack Ruby brought someone into his club, said, "I want you to meet a good friend of mine, Roscoe White." The next man was a witness in Dealey Plaza. He was across the street from where Ransom Brewer was filming, and he fell to the ground when the shots were fired, and then he handled all behind the picket fence where the shots come from and the puff of smoke, and he was encountered by a Secret Service man with Secret Service credentials telling him to get away. The man had a rifle stuck under his coat. He was shown 10 photographs. Of the 10 photographs, he picked one out as being the man that encountered him, and it was Roscoe White.
Howard says another witness said she was filming in Dealey Plaza that day and was panning toward the grassy knoll.
And her camera was confiscated by the FBI the next day, and the film never been seen. But she saw Roscoe White walking down the steps from the grassy knoll area to Elm Street after the shots were fired, and she recognized him as Geneva's husband because she worked for Jack Ruby herself. The next witness came forward. He's the principal of one of the high schools in Dallas and was chosen to go on the shuttle flight that exploded if that girl had gotten sick. Very credible. And he was best friends with J.D. Tippit's son. And he said 3 weeks before the assassination, a man came to the Tippit house and they got an argument with J.D. Tippit, and it was Roscoe White. He saw his picture in the Texas Monthly magazine in December of 1990. A woman and her daughter came to sit one night about 10 o'clock. Said, "I need to tell you something." I said, "What's that?" Said, "I was working for one of Jack Ruby's attorneys. In fact, I was married to him. And he was one of Jack Ruby's first attorney. And before the assassination, and after Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, Roscoe White was at our place every day, before and after the assassination, arranging what we were going to do with Jack Ruby."
One other witness, a woman, phoned Howard but told him she was scared to come to the center. When he met with her, Howard says she told him that her stepfather was one of Roscoe White's best friends and that Roscoe would come to their house to play cards. She said back then her stepfather was the director of one of the major funeral homes in Dallas, and he was also a reconstruction artist on bodies.
And at 12:35 on November 22nd, he was called from the funeral home. He said he had to go directly to Kaplan Hospital. And Friday night he didn't come home. Saturday he came home very late and packed the family up and then drove to Austin, Texas, which he called a safe house. And stayed, there's a guy that ran the safe house, had a big red beard, and an anti-Castro Cuban poster right over the walls. Sunday morning, they got up early, drove to San Antonio. He made the kids play out in the yard and watch TV. When Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald, he went out the yard, said, "We can go to Dallas now, it's safe."
The woman told Howard that she believed her stepfather altered Kennedy's body and later helped Roscoe White dispose of those who may have known or seen too much.
What makes it interesting, her stepfather was arrested in 1975. And remember, he's a director of a funeral home, an expert in this field. He's arrested for conspiracy to commit murder. He tried to kill the wife of a deputy sheriff. Tried to burn her to death. Hit her in the head with a hammer first and set her body on fire, which he survived. And I beat him. And he called on the phone to his wife's stepdaughter, said, I'm in trouble. I need to see you. And they met with him for about 30 minutes, but he wouldn't tell him how far. Then he was arrested. In 1975, the day he was going to go to trial, as they were walking from the jail, the criminal court building, to the courthouse, he was shot in the back by a police officer and killed on the day of the trial.
When Howard contacted the man's attorney, he says the attorney would not discuss the man or the incident with him at all. Howard says he has signed affidavits as well as videotaped each person who has come forward with information and that he has obtained 65,000 signatures at the center to have this case reopened in Dallas.
We're in the process now of going to trial in Texas, in Dallas, about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, where it should have been investigated the first time. It was a Texas murder. In 1963, it was not a federal crime to kill the President of the United States. It is now. It's still on the books in Texas because there's no statute of limitations on homicide. So we have the right to do this ourselves through a grand jury investigation and subpoena the people that should have been subpoenaed in 64 and 76. So that's our intention this morning.
And who does Howard believe was behind the plot to kill Kennedy?
I can tell you what I think with the information I have. I think Roy Williams and the CIA killed him. With the mafia as a junior partner, and using Oswald as the patsy. Oswald never fired a shot, and it was covered up in the very top by J. Edgar Hoover, Allen Dulles, and Lyndon Johnson. And that's how it happens. This is what I know.
I think the puzzle is that here it is almost 30 years after the crime, and we still don't know who killed our president, and that our government has done everything within its power to keep us from knowing it. They have covered up the evidence, manipulated the evidence, destroyed the evidence, and they continue to do so even to this date.
On August the 6th of 1990, the JFK Assassination Information Center in Dallas, Texas, at a news conference that went worldwide, we had Ricky there to tell his story about his father, Roscoe White. The next day, in the newspapers in Dallas and all over the world, the CIA, the FBI and the Dallas Police Department said Roscoe White was a nobody. We filed on the Freedom of Information Act to find out if this nobody had any FBI documents on it. If he was a nobody, he shouldn't have any.
But the FBI did have information on Roscoe White, a total of 46 pages. 26 of those were withheld because they were classified. And out of the 20 pages researchers did receive, 19 had been blacked out.
It's there. It's hard evidence. And like I said before, if someone's faked this story, that may be a bigger story than the Roscoe White story. Why?
The paper may deny the truth.
Another witness Larry Howard told me about says Lee Harvey Oswald was a good friend of his. The witness, Ron Lewis, says Oswald told him a man was being trained to kill the president and would be positioned in the Dallas Police Department through Jack Ruby's connections. Lewis, who worked for Oliver Stone on the movie JFK, has written a book about Oswald. In it, he writes, "When Lee told me that Roscoe White was going to be the assassin, I laughed and said something like, 'Indeed, Lee, a man named Roscoe is going to kill the president? What a funny name for an assassin.'" Lewis's book, Flashback, The Untold Story of Lee Harvey Oswald was released to bookstores just last week. Our exclusive series, JFK, The West Texas Connection, will be back in a few short weeks. In the meantime, our research continues.
If I could have had my way, I would have liked to have seen him be president. He would have made a great president. But beyond that, he served his country and his state with enormous distinction, and we're all very proud to have known him.
Former President Richard Nixon is one of many political leaders in Austin today remembering former Texas Governor John Connally. But while many are paying tribute to the late governor, some believe his death could shed new light on the most famous murder mystery in the history of our country, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy almost 30 years ago. Good evening and thanks for joining us. I'm Becky Neighbors. Former Governor Connally died Tuesday of respiratory problems. He was 76. It was November 22, 1963, in Dallas, when Governor Connally was seriously wounded in the assassination of President Kennedy. Till the day he died, bullet fragments remained in Connally's body. These bullet fragments have federal and state officials debating the question over whether they should be removed from the body. Now, some believe the pieces could be the last missing piece to the puzzle as to who really killed JFK. Here are comments from Connally's brother, a Dallas FBI agent, and the Dallas district attorney about this question.
Well, they would have to approach someone other than me, because I wouldn't give it the time of day, really, to even ask Nellie to permit this to be done. And even if I did, I don't think that it would be forthcoming at all.
Well, I think it would be very helpful to the American public and to the overall resolution of the Kennedy assassination if we could undertake a procedure to recover that evidence.
This office does not intend to do anything about recovering the fragments from the body of John Connally.
Last month, in my series of exclusive reports, JFK, The West Texas Connection, I interviewed the director of the JFK Assassination Information Center in Dallas, Larry Howard. It is Mr. Howard who has written a letter to Governor Ann Richards and others asking that the bullet fragments be removed. Howard and other researchers believe the pieces could disprove the single bullet theory of President Kennedy's assassination. We hope to hear from Mr. Howard via telephone during a live interview. We are trying to get that set up right now. He has been inundated by reporters from all over the country, trying to speak with him. We have been on the phone with him earlier and are trying to talk to him concerning his letter. But right now, it's Midlander Ricky White, who says his father was one of multiple shooters that fateful day in Dealey Plaza when Kennedy was gunned down. Ricky is here tonight with me. And what do you think about Mr. Howard's letter asking that those bullet fragments be removed from Governor Connally's body, Ricky?
I believe it would be a perfect opportunity to take that, to take consideration of my father's involvement in the JFK.
All right. Now, for those who did not get to see a JFK, The West Texas Connection, a series of exclusive reports we did here only last month here on Big Two, refresh their memory, our viewers' memory, of why you believe your father was involved.
Well, back in 1981, I'd found a diary that had belonged to my father that took many years to be able to come to a point and realize that my father was involved in the JFK. In May of 88, the FBI took me serious, came in and interrogated, took me into town, then shortly went into involvement into the safe deposit box.
All right, if Mr. Howard and other researchers have their way and they are able to have these bullet fragments removed from the late governor, what do you think could come from all of that?
Well, it could be a good stepping stone to my father's story and the fact that we're trying to get people involved in my father's story to help come out the truth of the JFK.
All right. Thank you very much, Ricky, for being with us this evening.
Okay.
And as we've said, we will try to have more reports at JFK, The West Texas Connection, in weeks to come. We hope we are researching some more information and hope to have some more stories for you later on. Now, let's go to a break. We'll be right back. Hopefully, we can go to Mr. Howard live in Dallas. Maybe not, but we'll keep trying. Stay with it. All right, hopefully we do have this live interview of Mr. Larry Howard. He is the director of the JFK Assassination Information Center in Dallas. It is Mr. Howard who wrote this letter to Governor Ann Richards and others asking that bullet fragments be removed from former late Governor John Connolly's body. Mr. Howard, can you tell me any reaction from the FBI or others?
Yeah, matter of fact, I just heard the FBI comments. They wanted the bullet fragments removed also, which is kind of unusual. I certainly don't want the FBI handling this evidence again, but their statement was that, yes, they would like the bullet fragments removed also.
All right. Now, I don't really have time to sit here and read this letter. We did receive a fax copy of the letter that you sent to the governor. And who else did you send this letter to, first of all?
I sent it to the Houston Medical Examiner's office. I sent it to the Dallas DA's office.
Okay. If you could summarize what you say in the letter. I don't want to sit here and read it. Can you just pretty much summarize what you said in it?
We're certainly sympathizing with the family at the time of John Connolly's loss, but we stated that we felt that the evidence in the case, the fragments in his wrist, would prove that the single bullet theory is it doesn't exist, which I don't think it ever did anyway. That was our point, but we also stated that Governor Connolly now has one last opportunity to tell us even more than he was able to in life, and prove for us and for history that he not only told the truth, but he was absolutely right. He himself said he was not hit by the bullet that hit John Kennedy.
All right, Mr. Howard, are you representing many researchers by sending out this letter? Is this just you or who?
No, actually, Dr. Sarah Wack, one of the top pathologists in the world, and myself sent the letter to Ann Richards and the other people. I would have not done this probably on my own without Dr. Sarah Wack's support.
All right. Well, right now it doesn't look like it's going to happen for you folks who want the bullet fragments removed from the late governor's body. So where do you go from here?
Well, we are now in the process of retrieving the medical records of possibly the autopsy of Governor Connolly, records in the past months and years, maybe x-rays of the wrist. There's a bullet fragment still in the chest cavity and also one in his left thigh. So we're going to request that we have access to all those medical records.
Mr. Howard, thank you for joining us. I hope you can call me back a little later. Maybe we can record some more interview and have that for our viewers tonight at 10 o'clock.
Those of you that have not purchased my book yet and would like to learn more about the assassination, drop me an email at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com and I will get you a personalized signed copy in the mail. It would make a great gift for anyone interested in the JFK assassination. It is an oversized coffee table style book that is over 500 pages and contains hundreds of pictures, most of them in vibrant color. I can promise you will not be disappointed in the book. The price is $60 for the hardcover and $40 for the softcover. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com.